my bald spot.
What bald spot? You mean your head?
Oh, damn.
God bless.
He is thinning. You're right. Thinning. If it makes you feel better, on the shirt Krista made, you have like a full head of hair. But I also look like Jesus.
Everyone should go buy our t-shirt.
It's a great t-shirt.
If you have not visited rowdysouthernsaturday.com,
I'll put the link to the t-shirt in the description of the episode. You should definitely go check that out. There's a pickleball set we got on there if you fancy pickleball. Oh, yeah,
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Do you like t-shirts? Do you like glasses, coffee mugs? Anything that you can buy at Academy Sports and Outdoors, you really shouldn't, because we have it.
Not sponsored Rowdy by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
And do you like kids being fed? Because my children will go hungry if you don't buy our merchandise. Kids deserve to be fed.
So we're going to talk about Alabama and Georgia and my SEC schedule predictions for Alabama and Georgia in this episode. But I do want to point out that I just saw Matt drinking out of a Florida Gators cup. Matt, what's going on over here?
Dad's house and my selection is very limited. I grabbed the first cup that I could find.
I will say I'm a little shocked by this.
I was sitting on a couch with a Florida Gator blanket behind me. I'm surrounded by Florida Gator things everywhere in this house. There's really no winning here.
Yeah, every time I walk into that house, I feel like a part of me just starts to burn inside. Just way too much Florida gear, too much blue and orange for me.
Dad's not here to defend himself currently. He just walked in. Oh, beautiful. Well, Caesars delivers.
This episode of Rowdy Southern Saturday was brought to you by DoorDash.
I'm cool with it. But wow, I did not expect – when you said you ordered pizza, I didn't expect Little Caesars to be delivered.
That delivery fee costs more than the pizza.
We don't talk about that.
All right, Matt. While you scarf down that piece of pepperoni pizza, we got a lot of conference realignment happening recently. A lot that's happened in the past year, and even more that's happened in the past month. College football is changing.
It's been the past 2 years when you had Texas and Oklahoma kind of starting everything off, adding the 15th and 16th team to the SEC. And obviously, we'd had during all the SEC media days, they talked about what's going to become of the SEC next year. I mean, this is the last year that college football is going to look the way it does. It's going to be completely different. You got the Big 12 now is going to add Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, and Colorado from the Pac-12. You got USC, UCLA, Oregon, and Washington all leaving the Pac-12 to go to the Big 10.
And who's the Pac-12 getting?
Nobody. As it says on our little list we have on thank you Fan Nation for supplying our resource page. But the Pac-12 is losing USC, UCLA, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, Colorado, and is getting no one so far. They might bring in some Mountain West teams. They've talked about it. But honestly, I think this whole conference is just going to completely scrap itself. I think the Mountain West is going to become the conference of the West. Or at least the conference of the West that's actually in the West and not teams from the West just playing in the Big Ten and the SEC and the Big 12. So Lord knows what's going to happen to the ACC. They haven't added anyone. Nobody's left yet. I don't know what the deal is going on there. Everybody's talking about Florida State leaving, Clemson leaving, essentially Miami. But so far we haven't had anybody. So it's going to be crazy to see what happens. Obviously completely changes the outlook for conferences in college football. The SEC's doing away with divisions. They're going to go to the two best teams in the conference are going to play each other. They're not going to a pod system, but they're going to something similar to a pod system where they're just keeping, what is it? I think it's like two or three rivals apiece, depending on the team. And then the rest are all rotating. So the good thing is in the SEC, every team is going to play each other at least every other year, which is going to be really cool. And every 4 years, you're going to play that team at home. So that'll be exciting. At least for most teams, I believe that's how it is. So with Oklahoma and Texas coming in, it's going to be really cool. We got to see the schedules for next year. I think we already talked about those on a recent episode. So yeah, lots going on. And obviously, there's still to be seen what's going to happen with the Big Ten, Big 12. We have no idea what's going to happen besides that they're adding these four new teams. And I mean, it's kind of exciting. Lots of new stuff happening. Lots of bigger name matchups. But also, it's going to be completely different, especially with the 12-team playoff.
I hate it. I am such an old man, but I hate it so freaking much, because it's one thing if you want to add like Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC. I was already not happy about that whenever that was announced. And then I knew that the dominoes were going to fall and we were going to – I don't even think Nebraska should be in the Big Ten. They should still be in the Big 12. They never should have left. If they were still in the Big 12, they'd still be relevant. more relevant than they are now, at least. Colorado going back to the Big 12, I'm cool with that because that's where they belong. They never belonged in the Pac-12 to begin with. But the rest of it, like all of the schools, Cincinnati, SMU, all the schools that are heading to the Big 12 after the departure of Texas or Oklahoma, like, don't mind that just because it's like, all right, whatever, like the Big 12 is just kind of going to exist. I don't know. It just, to me, it ruins a lot of the elements of everything that was college football, which was like part of the reason the SEC was what it is because it's like, oh yeah, we are the Southeast and we kick everybody's ass in American collegiate tackle football.
I will give credit to the Big 12 commissioner, whatever his name may be, because I can't recall it off the top of my head. With all the nonsense that has gone on in conference realignment, not with Matt, I absolutely can't stand it. When Oklahoma and Texas came to the SEC, it doesn't feel natural. And now to have the Big 12 to have what is left over. And again, props to the Big 12. The Big 12 went out and got enough B-plus mid-tier conference teams and programs to make themselves relevant and still worthy of being called, in my mind, a power conference. They were able to do that with, you know, losing your two biggest assets, but yet adding teams like UCF and Cincinnati, who have been relevant out of the group of five here recently, and getting Houston, who honestly, if Dana Holgorsen could actually coach football, might be a better team. BYU has a national championship in the 80s. There's history there. You go and get the two Arizona schools. You bring in Dion in Colorado. You get Utah, who's the Pac-12 champion 2 years in a row. And Kyle Whittingham has had nothing but success. Shout out to the Pac-12. They did a great job to salvage themselves. But like I was saying, this is not good for the sport. We talked about it last episode, and I think that this is the major factor in what is hurting. You know, last episode we said ruining college football. I mean, it's very hard for me to have the game ruined. But you know, what's hurting the game and hurting the sport that we love is people behind the scenes making decisions that don't need to be making decisions. Geography used to matter, and it doesn't anymore. It's so stupid to me, and Matt talked about it with these baseball series and these other small sports that are going to be affected by it. You know, why is Oregon leaving the West Coast to come to Iowa to play a conference game? That just doesn't make sense. It makes absolutely no sense to me that's going to happen. But yeah, with Texas and Oklahoma coming to the SEC, like, I'm okay with it in a sense, but if that was all that happened, I'd have been more satisfied with that. And, you know, I hate that we're losing the Pac-12. The Pac-12 has been irrelevant up until really last year. When USC finally made their return with Lincoln Riley to the national stage. And it's going to be a really good conference this year. We're not going to talk about the Pac-12 on this show because it's not, you know, we don't really cover that side of the country. But the Pac-12, man, top to bottom, it's going to be a very solid, very competitive conference this year. And one I would say to keep your eyes peeled on late at night on Saturdays. But I hate it. It's not good for the sport. You know, like I said, my main point here, props to the Big 12 for saving themselves in the best way that they possibly could have.
I will say, I think with the mass exodus of the Pac-12, it's actually done a lot for the group of five conferences coming into the 12-team yes. playoff. Because now you go in, you know, with the way they had the format for the 12-team playoff, it might change with everything going on, so we don't know for sure. But with the way it is right now, you get six conference champions who automatically get bids into the playoff and then six at-large bids. So if you take out the Pac-12, who is an automatic bid pretty much, unless there's a team that's like a 3 or 4 loss team that's just not good and they have somebody leapfrog them, the chances of them back, you know, back when they were the normal Pac-12, like this season, actually having a team to make it is very good. Now ACC, Sun Belt, Conference USA, they're all going to have a really good chance to have a team or multiple teams in that group make the playoff. So that'll be one thing that's cool. Really good for us as Georgia Southern alumni. Does that mean we're going to have a national champion from the Pac or from the group of five? Probably not. Yeah, we still have the SEC. We still have the Big Ten. We still have the Big 12 as the probably what I would say is the Big Three. I mean, the ACC, the Big 12, you can kind of go back and forth.
So here's the problem with that, though, Whit. Like, and this is coming from the stint of Georgia Southern, and I was excited when Georgia Southern went up to the FBS. All that's going to happen with this conference realignment is they're just creating a new system where there's going to be an FBS and an FCS. They're just creating a Power 2, which is going to eventually be 32 teams in the or 30 teams, however many they decide, in the Big Ten and then in the SEC. Because there's no way that the ACC is going to survive this. It's just not going to happen. The schools that have already been flirting with leaving, the ones that didn't want Stanford and Cal to come into the conference. So most likely, I would say Florida State, North Carolina, Miami, Clemson, NC State. Those are going to be the players that leave. Probably Duke is going to be involved in that as well. So Georgia Southern is never going to have a shot at this playoff because it's going to turn into the Big Ten SEC Invitational realistically.
Now we get to my point that I've been making since 2014. It comes to light finally. What was the point in Georgia Southern moving to the FBS? What was it?
Well, I think you're being short-sighted in that question, though, because at the time we didn't know that this conference realignment was going to happen. So, like, Georgia Southern moving to the Sun Belt, in my opinion, and the way that it happened, was an opportunity for Georgia Southern to take a leap forward. Were they going to be nationally competitive for a national championship? No. Not for a very long time, if ever. We would probably never see the day, but there was always the off chance that they had the year that UCF had where they go undefeated, and we can be like, oh, yeah, we won the national championship, even though we didn't make the playoff. But that was an opportunity for Georgia Southern that existed in the construct when they moved up. That doesn't exist anymore. So I feel like you can't be short-sighted and saying, well, what was the point of moving up?
Well, I mean, I get what you're saying. You're right. But when you hindsight is 2020, and now when you look back on it, you look back and see it's not even just applies to Georgia Southern. App State, James Madison, Sam Houston State, Jacksonville State, they all just came up. Why? Because in theory, and that's my whole thing about the 12-team playoff, is everybody wants to make this thing. It's like, oh, my goodness, the group of five now has this great opportunity to make the playoff. No, they don't. They don't. The fact of the matter is, let me lay something out for you. In a 12-team playoff world, as good as Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State are projected to be this year, in a 12-team playoff world, all three of those are going. This year, probably, LSU, Georgia, Tennessee, and Alabama, probably all going. And literally, I just named five of your six at-large bids right there with those teams. And you know it. Like, they're not going to take a 9-3 LSU team and look at a group of five team who like maybe didn't win their conference, and they're like, oh my goodness, Coastal Carolina is 11-1 and they're ranked number 17. Should we put them in the playoff? No, they're not going to go. They're not going to go because it doesn't matter. They're still in the group of five. They played a group of five schedule. And like Matt just said, eventually we're leading to SEC and the Big Ten becoming minor league football, AAA for the NFL, and the rest of the group of five being relegated to basically being IA ball.
So,
it's facts.
When that happens, I agree with you, Chad, and I think that is going to happen. I am totally with both of y'all. Eventually, they've been talking about it for years. There's going to be this giant super division, and it's just going to be the best teams from the Big Ten and the best teams from the SEC coming together, or it's just going to be the Big Ten as is and the SEC and like a AFC, NFC type NFL junior, like you guys keep saying. But that being said, right now, this is a really good thing for the group of five, and it's a great thing for Georgia Southern, and it makes Georgia Southern look really smart for jumping to the FBS level, because now if Georgia Southern wins their conference with how the Sun Belt is right now, with no Pac-12, that's two group of five teams that make it every single year, because they have to. If you win the conference, you're in. That's how it's set up right now.
No, like, see, that's the thing, though, is that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen that way.
Long term, no, but right now, that's the rule.
Look, you make a fair point. Yes, the Sun Belt probably right now is the, even with the, you know, with the, everybody jumping ship in the American's not as strong as it used to be. But just I don't foresee a world where they're going to change it. And yes, no one expected the Pac-12 to disintegrate, but I don't foresee a world where, because of the Pac-12's disintegration, like, they're going to change it to where that the six top conference champions and highest ranked, they're not going to keep that the same. Because we're fixing to be in a world where there's only four power conferences. And they're just going to give the rest of the eight bids out to at-larges. And maybe one group of five champion, which more than likely they're going to validate the American Athletic Conference.
They would have to give a bid to the conference champions. The six highest conference champions.
As of now, it's the six. Chad's argument is they're going to change it before it even happens.
Change that.
Okay. I'm assuming. Okay. But as of now, the rule is it's six conference champions for the entire FBS. So right now there has to be two group of five conference champions that make the playoff every single year, unless they change that before it happens next year. Which, personally, I mean, I don't know if that's official set in stone, but I feel like since they already put it out there, we're at least going to get one or two seasons of that, and they might change it afterwards. But who the hell knows what's going to happen, though? At the end of the day, it's all just thrown in the air. People are throwing stuff out there. We know the schedules of what's going to happen in the SEC, and I guess the Big Ten put out their schedules too, but they didn't even put it out with Oregon and Washington, did they? They put it out before they joined. So now they got to add them in there.
They put this out I guess it was during the football season, at the end of the football season last year.
Yeah.
Because everyone was able to apply last year's active playoff and bowl rankings into the, quote, new playoff system that's going to exist in the 12-team playoff. It is what it is. I hate it, but.
Well, I will say, I know one team that's going to make the playoff actually, I know two teams. They're probably going to make the playoff every single year from here on out, especially with how things are now. Even if you're 9-3, shoot, I could see an 8-4 Alabama or Georgia making the playoff at this point with how things are gone. Especially once the SEC adds in Clemson or Florida State, you're going to have four lost national champions, which is going to be crazy.
This episode next year and the year after that is just going to be nuts.
It's going to be crazy. But this week we got Alabama, Georgia, last two teams, obviously the best two teams in the SEC, best two. I guess you could say programs. I was about to say dynasties, but you can't say that about Georgia yet because they've only won two. So
got to say it like Coach Saban would. It's programs.
Best two programs in the SEC. And we're going to start with Alabama. Right. Matt, this is for you. So I want to say this. I started off when I originally did this prediction. I had LSU winning the conference. I turned it around. I had Texas A&M winning the conference. I somehow talked myself into maybe Auburn could win this conference. Or not conference, the divisions. Sorry, not conference. And then at the end of the day, did my research, looked at everything that's going on, realized that Nick Saban is still Nick Saban, and I have Alabama winning the SEC West. So I got Alabama going 11-1. And honestly, I will say this before I get into it. I think it has a lot to do with how Alabama's schedule sets up this year. You get MTSU to start the season, which is huge considering you have a first year starting quarterback and three quarterbacks with massive question marks on them coming into the year. I mean, I think it's the biggest question marks that Saban's ever had at quarterback, maybe besides the Blake Sims, who started, and Jake Coker. Correct. So you got MTSU to start the year, see who you want at starting quarterback pretty much. Then you get Texas at home, which is huge. Texas, I think, takes a huge step forward. They're going to be really good. But they got to play at Bryant Denny, which will be tough. You go to USF, which I think is insane. I'm assuming it's some kind of recruiting move for Saban. Then you get Ole Miss at home. Yeah, you go to Tampa. Come on now. Don't give me that look, Chad. Then you got Ole Miss. You get Ole Miss at home.
Nothing says big recruiting weekend like spending a day and a half empty NFL stadium.
Either way, you get Ole Miss at home, who I think is going to be improved. You go to Mississippi State, who I think is not going to be improved. I think they're going to be terrible, as we've gotten into fights with Starkville fans all over TikTok about. Then you got A&M at A&M. Lord knows how they're going to be. I mean, that could be a tough one. I could see them tripping up there. I got them winning all those games. I got them beating Arkansas at home. They get Tennessee at home. I think they're going to destroy Tennessee at home. I think they're going to destroy LSU at home as a Nick Saban revenge factor. You go to Kentucky. I actually think that game's going to be tough for Alabama because of how I think Kentucky's going to be this year. But Alabama's still Alabama. Alabama and Georgia don't lose to Kentucky. I think I've only seen Georgia lose to Kentucky once in my entire life. You got Chattanooga with a win. I got them tripping up against Auburn. First year, Hugh Freeze playing in Jordan-Hare. This just feels so much like a black magic. Like, Hugh Freeze needs one huge win, and it's either going to be – I mean, Matt's been saying it all offseason. It's going to be Georgia or Alabama. They're just going to somehow come out of nowhere and beat them. And honestly, people keep talking about this. Everybody thinks Auburn just doesn't have the team for Hugh Freeze to work with. I think they got plenty of players. Like, there's a lot of guys who have underachieved because of what they had with Brian Harsin. I think with Hugh Freeze there doing what he's going to do, I think, I mean, they're going to start off with the Michigan State transfer quarterback, whose name I can't remember right now. But they're going to have, yeah, Peyton Thorne. But they're going to have Robbie Ashford at the end of the season be the starter. I guarantee you. He's a good player. I saw him play at the end of last season. I think he's pretty solid. I think he fits Hugh Freeze's system really well, too. And honestly, I think Peyton Thorne's a little overrated. He had a really good season in 2021. Last year, he didn't look good at all. So I think by the end of the season, Auburn's a pretty tough football team to play against. And I think they get like a crazy out of nowhere win against Alabama. I think there's going to be a good Alabama team, but I still don't think Alabama is where they were when Nick Saban was at his peak. And you had the guys like Derrick Henry and all those guys where you just run away with national championships. So I think they get by with 11-1, win the SEC West, but I'm still iffy on how I think Alabama's going to be this year. I could see them being somewhere around 9-3 as well. I think that's my floor for them.
I mean, we are a very, very interesting group this year. And honestly, I don't remember there being this many question marks as a whole with an Alabama team. Gosh, maybe 2010. But that team was even supposed to be pretty stout because we were returning Mark Ingram. We were returning Greg McElroy. We had just won a natty. That was supposed to be a really good team. This year is so odd because talking about the quarterback situation, the quarterback battles that I remember, you know, there being a lot of question marks around: one, Blake Sims; two, Jake Coker; and then three, the year that Jalen Hurts ended up becoming the starter, but Blake Barnett started the first game of the year against USC. Jalen Hurts, if we remember, first snap of his career was a fumble. There was a lot of question marks around what was going to go on there. We beat the crap out of USC in that game. What I think Alabama is going to be this year is dependent more upon the defense than the quarterback. And that might sound like a cop-out answer, but I think if Tyler Buchner somehow wins the job at quarterback, I still think that the defense is going to be the hinge on what this season is. Losing Pete Golding, I've had many, many episodes where I just was like, wanted to fire Pete into the sun. But a lot of times I have to remind myself, Pete Golding was drawing up schemes that the players had to execute. And a lot of times the defense would execute, there would just be a blown coverage or something. And so it was a defensive talent issue, not necessarily a Pete Golding issue. Scheme was right. All just went executed wrong. Losing Pete Golding, I think, is going to be a big factor this year. Having Kevin Steele come in feels very much like a gap hire for Nick Saban on the defensive side of the ball. Kevin Steele's worked with Nick Saban before when he was at LSU. Kevin Steele's got a lot of experience in the SEC. He was most recently Auburn's defensive coordinator. He's been in the state of Alabama before. He has had a lot of really good defenses. Even in his time at Auburn, his defenses were pretty good. It feels like a gap hire. Tommy Reese, new offensive coordinator coming from Notre Dame. Very questionable hire. I think that could – I don't really know how to feel about it because, on one hand, it feels like Nick Saban looked at last year and looked at the past few years and said, okay, and we were the standard of college football. We ran the ball effectively, and we played good defense. And to me, that changed once Lane Kiffin came in, and you had Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian and Brian Daboll and Mike Locksley as the offensive coordinators. It changed the way that Alabama football was, where it was high-powered offense and a defense that was on the field for a majority of the game, and so they gave up more points as a byproduct. Now Saban is saying, we're going back to the original way that we built this thing. We're going to have an offense that's catered to our quarterback's abilities. It's going to strongly rely on the running game, and our defense is just going to go back to being the Crimson Anaconda, where it sucks the life out of the opponent and doesn't let them score points. If that happens, I think we've got a really good chance at winning the national championship this year. If that doesn't happen, we're going to go 8-4, 9-3.
Here's my question for you, Matt, before you give the mic to Chad, because I want to hear what you got to think about this. So I kind of felt the same way about Alabama, but when you look through their roster, I mean, dude, they lost a lot of guys on defense. A lot. Yes. I think they're bringing back two starters this year, which Kool-Aid McKinstry, who is probably the best corner in the SEC coming into the season.
And Dallas Turner.
Dallas Turner, who's probably the best pass rusher in the SEC coming into the season, or top three, give or take. So, like, both those guys are really good players. But besides that, I mean, and it's all five stars. I mean, you got five stars and four stars backing everybody up, but it's all first-time players or first-year starters, too. So, to me, it's kind of like, it's hard to say, like, Kevin Steele's going to come in and just make this, like, a Nick Saban-type dominant defense. But it's also, at the end of the day, it's Nick Saban. And that's why I have them 11-1, because you can look at this roster and go, there are deficits all over the place. This is the most unsure about roster I've ever seen from Nick Saban coming into a season. And it's just because of how many guys they lost, so much turnover in the coaching staff, so much turnover. I mean, at quarterback, you don't have a guy on here that you're like, that guy is the next Bryce Young. That's the next Tua Tagovailoa. Like, it's guys that you're all very unsure about. And any of these guys could be good. They're all like probably B-, B-level quarterbacks, but there's not a guy on here that's like, that's a potential A at all. So, that's been my question mark, but like I said, it's still Nick Saban, and that's why I have it going 11-1. That, along with the schedule, getting who they get at home. So that was my take on that prediction.
Malachi Moore's a returning starter on defense too in the secondary. He kind of took a step back last year. He got hurt. He was a beast his freshman year. Got hurt towards the end of the year. But Malachi Moore is a returner. The defensive line, I think, is going to be where we have to make sure that we're actually going to get a lot of pressure. Dresmond Marshall is going to be a key piece as a linebacker.
He's a good player, yeah, Dresmond Marshall.
There's a lot of talent. Nick Saban just had the number one recruiting class in the country.
Yeah.
The talent's there. The issue, and this is something that I think we've talked about off the record, where Alabama started to have slips in, like, dents in the armor, and you started to see, like, oh, maybe it's not what it was. Honestly, when Scott Cochran left from being the strength and conditioning coach, strength and conditioning program is so important for – that's the baseline of your culture. And there's a reason why Kirby Smart wanted Scott Cochran to come with him when he left to Georgia when he first went. And he ultimately brought Scott Cochran over to be the special teams coordinator because Cochran wanted an on-field role. Saban said, no, I'm not doing it. Then we had, Brian. It was two guys that took over the strength and conditioning program. They did a really good job. Since they left, it's been a very, like, hit-or-miss foundational culture. You hear guys – it used to be like – oh, yeah, guys like, you know, Najee Harris that were like, oh, I wanted to transfer my freshman year. I was going to transfer if I didn't play in the Natty. But Saban challenges the young players. He expects them to live up to the standard. There's a lot of talent on the team. I think he's going to get the most out of this team. What worries me is defense, and, you know, that is the hinge. Jalen Milroe is probably going to be the starting quarterback based off of everything that I've read about scrimmages. Tyler Buckner actually had a pretty good day yesterday. I was reading about it. Tyler Buckner's been playing well. Don't be surprised if you see both of them take snaps, key snaps, early in the year. Ty Simpson is kind of floundered. I don't know what's happened this year with his development. I don't know. He just kind of seems to have fallen behind the other two. I've been going on and on. I could talk about Alabama and what we're going to do in 2023 for hours. Chad, let's hear your thoughts on the Tide.
No one's gonna be able to see it, obviously, when they listen to it. But I was over here mocking Matt for how long he went about that because I knew that was gonna happen. But, but no, I think Matt's got a good point. But I have three letters, and Matt, I'll ask you if you know what I mean when I say them. JMB. Thoughts at all? JMB. What that stands for?
JMB.
Yes.
Jalen Milroe.
Joyless Murder Ball.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
I think it's the return of Joyless Murder Ball. Listen.
My God, I hope so.
Look, Whit, I think Whit said something that raised a point or at least kind of clicked a light bulb in my head. You know, Whit said there's questions about Jalen Milroe. But wasn't there questions about Jake Coker? Wasn't that team really freaking good? Wasn't Alabama at their best when their recipe, like Matt said, was cooking up running backs in the backfield, making smart throws by a quarterback who you knew wasn't elite?
Went undefeated as a starter, might I add. Stop shitting on my boy.
For one season.
But it doesn't matter. Does Jake Coker have a ring? Jake Coker,
yes, he does.
Jake Coker has more rings than Jake Fromm.
Jake Coker also has more handoffs than any quarterback in college football history in a single season. Jake Coker has
more rings than Jake Fromm and Matthew Stafford.
He does. So, you're right.
Derrick Henry.
Not more than Stetson Bennett, though, who was a walk-on, I might add.
Jake Coker might as well have been a walk-on himself. But listen, everybody wants to write Saban off. And I've said this for the past couple of years. Everybody like the same thing about Clemson. And now, obviously, on a little bit of a different scale, but everybody wants to write Saban off. And, oh, it's Georgia's time now. And, yeah, absolutely. We're fixing to talk about Georgia. Georgia's a very good football team. There's a very good chance that Georgia could three-peat this year. But until Nick Saban is in a box made of pine wood, is below the dirt, and is up there with Jesus having a pickup game, this Alabama football team is going to be in contention. They're going to be really, really good. Do you know that of the six highest rated recruiting classes of all time, Alabama has three currently on their campus? Blue chip ratio is a thing. And Alabama's blue chip ratio is through the roof. It doesn't matter how young and inexperienced they are. Listen, if Alabama loses a game, it's not going to be into the SEC championship. I do not see a regular season loss outside of maybe Texas. Texas is going to be a tough game. Texas is going to be a really tough game, and Texas is going to want to come in and get revenge on what they probably think is a game they should have won last year. We could sit here and talk about that all night if we wanted to, but the fact is Alabama won. Look, Willis Murder Ball is back. I'm calling it now. Alabama's going to run it down your throat. Alabama, it's not going to be fun to play Alabama this year. And I think Alabama's going to play, as you heard me say in the last episode, Tennessee in the SEC championship. And we'll see what happens then, because I think Alabama's going to smoke Tennessee in Bryant Denny for revenge, and then we'll have the rematch. Joyless Murder Ball is back. Alabama will be in the college football playoff one way or another, whether they have a loss or not. You can doubt them all you want, but the quarterback play, it'll be good enough because they're going to run it down your throat.
I've got no more words. I mean, I
for once,
if you give me the mic back and say, Matt, talk more, I will. don't you tempt me with a good time.
I think we've heard enough about Alabama.
Joyless Murder Ball. Let me hear Matt say it.
I really hope that there's Joyless Murder Ball. I love Nick Murder Ball. It's my favorite thing in the world.
Last team, 14. We're not doing Oklahoma and Texas this year. Sorry, everybody. Didn't have time. So we got reigning national champions, reigning SEC champions, Georgia Bulldogs coming in. I got Georgia winning the SEC East. As everybody knows, I got Georgia losing to Tennessee. So they have, that's their one loss. Outside of that, I have Georgia
hopefully
running through what is honestly probably the easiest schedule I think Georgia's ever had that since I've been alive. And granted, Oklahoma was supposed to be on the schedule in the Ball State Week 2 section, and it got erased because they're coming to the SEC. But you got UT Martin Week 1, Ball State Week 2. South Carolina Week 3, all at home. UAB Week 4, all at home. That's 4-0, in my opinion, pretty easily. And South Carolina could be sneaky. They still got Rattler. They still have some good players, but they lost a lot of their best players last year too. So I just don't see them coming into Sanford Stadium and winning that game, but you never know. You got at Auburn, which, as we said, Hugh Freeze, Black Magic, never know what's going to happen. I got Georgia winning that game. Kentucky at home, at Vanderbilt, Florida game, Missouri, Ole Miss at home. I don't see any losses there at all. Tennessee, you got Tennessee in Neyland. Obviously, we know Neyland's one of the toughest places to play in college football when they're good. I think Georgia's a better team than Tennessee, top to bottom. Tennessee's offense is deadly. Josh Heupel is very deadly, especially on offense. I think when Tennessee is rocking and rolling on offense, they are the perfect storm for Georgia's defense. So I think this is where Heupel gets his win over Georgia, because at some point he's going to, and I think this is the season that it's going to happen. And then Georgia Tech, at Georgia Tech, it's going to be a beatdown. So I think 11-1 is easy. I mean, I think 12-0 is really more realistic than 11-1, to be honest. But like I said, I mean, Georgia has gone 12-0 the last two seasons. I don't see it happening for a third year in a row. But I do have Georgia winning the SEC East. And for the record as well, I have Georgia playing Alabama in the SEC Championship, and I have Georgia beating Alabama, and I actually think Georgia beats Alabama pretty handedly. Not a beatdown, but I think it's by double digits.
Ooh. Such bias.
What was that, Chad?
I'm not going to repeat myself because Keys wants everything to be PG, but I cannot stand to listen to Witt salivate about Georgia. It absolutely infuriates me because – and I could say some innuendous things, but I won't. I mean, first of all, and I'm not just sounding bitter because I'm a Florida fan. Look, all due respect to Georgia, back-to-back national championships. Kirby Smart is the second best coach in all of college football. I'm not going to sit here and act like Georgia is not a good team. They are. I'm going to give them their respect. However, Georgia, I think, is playing, it's like Witt just said, Statesboro High School is playing a harder schedule than Georgia is this year. I mean, listen, the Blue Devils are going to have a tough run. Georgia's not. I think the only loss that Georgia has is against Tennessee in Neyland. The only reason that I think that Georgia loses that game is, like Witt said, it's going to be the perfect storm. It's actually late in the year, which is very surprising. I have both those teams coming into that game undefeated. That's not true. Tennessee, I already have them losing to Alabama at that point, so I take that back. But Tennessee is going to be playing for their playoff life. They're going to be playing for their SEC East life. Carson Beck, he's never been put in a situation like this before. It's going to be the exact opposite of what we saw last year, and that environment at Sanford Stadium was insane, and I think the environment in Neyland Stadium is going to match what it was for the Alabama game last year. I think there's a very good chance that we could see goalposts thrown into the river for the second consecutive season. Look, Georgia, I do not have them winning the East, so I don't have them in the SEC Championship game. I agree with you, 11-1, and I agree on the loss. There's not much else to say, and I think Georgia most likely, even at 11-1 without winning the SEC, is still going to be in the playoff. But I do not have them winning the national championship because of my main thing against Georgia is Carson Beck's inexperience. That is it. Other than that, Georgia's top to bottom, very good team.
Yeah, I got two words, and those two words are defense travels. It does not matter what Carson Beck does when you have a defense that's being coached ultimately by Kirby Smart. Obviously, Glenn Schumann's the defensive coordinator. It's Kirby Smart's defense. Kirby Smart, and I've got to give him his credit on this too. He was the same way at Alabama that he was whenever he was at that he is at Georgia. And Kirby has a lot of Nick Saban qualities. Obviously, he picked those up in his time there. The one thing that he is much better at than Nick Saban has ever been is cutting up with the players in a way that, like, you can see the love that dude has for his guys. Last year with Tennessee, like the chest bumps, running up and doing the little hand thing and stirring the pot and, you know, like everything that Kirby does, you could see there's a genuine love between that defense and him. And he has to be one of the best motivating coaches in college football. I mean, he was able to convince, along with Nolan Smith last year, that there was a writer that said Georgia was going 7-5 after winning the Natty. Like, he's got them like so locked in, like it's a communist camp where he can get them to believe anything, and they buy in, and that he's got the full culture there that is perfect for this. And I'll be honest, I think Georgia has two games that they should be like moderately concerned about, and that's at Auburn and at Tennessee. But I don't think that they're going to lose either of those games. Carson Beck, sure, he's inexperienced, but guess what? You're going to have to be able to score on that defense. You're going to have to be able to put together some extensive drives and wear them down, and they're not going to allow you to do that. Even in Neyland, even in Jordan Air, I hate both of those schools with a fiery passion. But I just don't see Georgia losing. They've got such a good like lineup for schedule. I hate saying it's a cupcake because they do have two games that are like moderately tough.
It's a cupcake.
It's an easy schedule in comparison to a lot of other schools. Again, I understand the point of Oklahoma. I used to have to defend myself all the time. I've had people be like, oh, Alabama's schedule's so easy. So I get it. You still have to play the games. You still have to win the games. You still have to go out there. You can't just roll your jock out there and beat them. I think Georgia's going to be undefeated going into Atlanta. If, you know, if they're undefeated going into Atlanta, they're in the playoff. If Alabama's undefeated going into Atlanta, they're in the playoff. And we could have a whole new, like, section of what happened in 2021 where we've got another Alabama-Georgia natty. And then everyone's going to be like, we need to expand a 24-team playoff because Georgia and Alabama keep winning.
Matt, I do want to say I do appreciate the fact that our relationship has gone from, a mutual respect for one another to now I feel like we've taken on like a big brother, little brother approach where like you're kind of my big brother leading me into what is going to be Georgia's dynasty, like just slowly informing me of all the things I'm about to go through as Georgia continuously wins over the past 10 years with Kirby Smart. And I appreciate it because I'm going to need some help. I'm going to need some guidance. And I appreciate your wisdom and your lack of youth. So thank you.
That means nice way of saying that I'm old, but
I couldn't imagine being your age and doing what you do today.
Yeah, you know, and the great thing about it is though, Whit, and this is also the worst part about it. Every game you're going to get nervous. Minus like Ball State, but like when they're going to be playing Kentucky, and you're going to be like, I don't know. You're going to talk yourself into the fact that they could actually lose that game.
I did it last year a couple times. I went into a lot of the games like Kentucky last year. I was at a wedding and I was like, I don't even care to watch it. And then it was close, and I was like, what is this crap? Like every single game, like Missouri. Oh my gosh, I was about to have a heart attack, and I thought we were going to steamroll Missouri.
Okay, 2016, whenever Alabama played against Mississippi State, went into that game being like, yeah, we could realistically lose this game. And then it took a Jalen Hurts pass to Calvin Ridley to win with like 30 seconds left. And it was in Starkville. It was a terrible – oh, God, that was awful. Yes, it would. Nick Fitzgerald played out of his mind. Dan Mullen schemed everything up like just perfectly. Offense was inept. And everyone before the game, they're like, come on, it's Mississippi State. And I was like, you never know. And then they were like, the real worst part about it is that anyone that you watch a game with is secretly hoping your team loses. You can feel it.
It's been that way for a while.
But it's going to be the most like snide remarks ever. Like, oh, wow. Every time something bad happens for your team, it like they'd be like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe what I'm watching. And you just want to be like...
I would just like to, you know, go on record and say that no matter how long Georgia's dynasty may go on, that I've always secretly hoped that Georgia loses every game.
it hasn't been that secret, Chad.
We'll say this, though, to cap everything off. I feel like more people need to learn how to interact like me and Whit rather than the Twitter fanboys of both Georgia and Alabama who just seemingly are just like they both claim like, oh, we live rent free in your head. And it's like, Jesus Christ, is this where we're at with college football, to where two of the great programs that aren't even really rivals are like the fans on Twitter are trying to turn it into a rivalry? Like, I understand it being a rivalry in the sense that like there's a lot of competition between the two right now. But, like, historically, it's not a rivalry.
My team sucks. Just want to be included in this conversation.
All right, so we're not going to pick week zero this week. I think we did it last year, but this year we're not going to do it. So we're not going to get to pick the likes of Navy, Notre Dame, UTEP at Jacksonville State, UMass at New Mexico State, and much to the disappointment of Matt, Hawaii at Vanderbilt.
Don't say it.
But we will talk about the recap of week zero a little bit next week, and we will pick the week one games in the next episode as well.
College football back on Saturday.
God, I can't wait. Right,
let's get it. Week one preview next week.
Thank you guys so much for tuning into Rowdy Southern Saturday. If you enjoyed the episode, please give us a 5-star rating on Spotify and Apple Music, and follow our social media at Rowdy Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.